It's Wednesday, February 11th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. And we are celebrating here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash for today, February 11th, 2009, is not only the 222nd Daily Audio Stash I have produced, it is also the 1 year anniversary of my taking over here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash. Big thanks to Chris Goldstein for founding the stash and for tapping me to be his successor. As I've said before, it's the greatest job a cannabis consumer could ever wish for. Now, and some other preliminary things here I wanted to mention. The bill that we'd been following in Minnesota, Senate File 97, a medical marijuana bill there, passed its committee 8-3 on a bipartisan vote. More information available at our blog, stash.normal.org. Also, a stasher writes into me about the Boycott Kellogg's campaign I'm running at boycottkelloggs.net, and she says it's important to not only boycott Kellogg's, but also support the sponsors that didn't get rid of Michael Phelps. So that's a good idea. Let's have all the stashers out there support Subway. That shouldn't be too hard. Omega Watches, they make a pretty nice watch. And Speedo? Well, my recommendation for those of you to support Speedo will be on a case-by-case basis. Now, in other stash happenings, last night I got to appear with McKenna and Paul and Dank on the MarijuanaRadio.com live show. Sure was a lot of fun. And, you know, the stash, you know, somebody once said that the stash is kind of like NPR for stoners. Well, if that's the case, then these guys are like the Howard Stern show for stoners. They were a lot of fun. A little bit more, shall we say, salty than I get here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash, but I adjusted the radio voice to fit. The only strange question that came at me during the whole interview...
Were you born with your radio voice? Is it your natural...
No, this radio voice, from years of singing in smoke-filled bars and screaming AC/DC covers while drinking Southern Comfort. Mm-hmm.
So cool. That'll fuck a vocal cord up.
Yeah, you're damn right.
Do you use it all the time, like when you're at the grocery store and stuff?
Oh, yeah. It's a big hit with the ladies. You know, the chicks dig me, of course, you know, for the big, big sexy radio waves. Hey there, McKenna. How you doing?
Hey. Big difference.
You know, I so much just wanted to say, yes, McKenna, when I came out of the womb, I turned to my mother and said, "This Sunday, we'll sell you the seat to see Russ Belville born, but you'll only need the edge. Bottles, diapers, baby food, cribs, get them while the getting is good, because tomorrow it's all gone. This Sunday, Radical Russ at the Mercy Hospital. Be there." All right, time to get serious here. Coming up on today's Normal Daily Audio Stash, we have a special exclusive interview with former police chief Norm Stamper, who's a member of Normal's advisory board, as well as the advisory board for law enforcement against prohibition. But most notably, he was the police chief in Seattle, Washington, prior to Gil Kerlikowske taking over as police chief, who has now just been named as Obama's pick, potentially, for the next drug czar. So we're going to get Norm Stamper's opinions on Chief Kerlikowske as the next potential drug czar right here in the second interview segment of the Normal Daily Audio Stash. In our first interview segment, we're going to have our regular cannabis science segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and we'll be discussing that study that came up in the news this Monday about the increased risk of testicular cancer for men who are heavy cannabis smokers. All that plus more news on the HB 5615 in Washington State, the medical marijuana that was passed in Haley, Idaho, and some congressional testimony on the salmonella poisonings that involves Kellogg's products. Also for your Daily Toker Tunes today, today is Reggae Wednesday, and MarijuanaMusicAwards.com will be serving up some fine reggae from Collie Buds. It's the podcast that gets you educated to get it regulated. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Obama taps Seattle Police Chief Kerlikowske for drug czar. From the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Seattle Police Chief Gil Kerlikowske has accepted a job in the Obama administration, most likely overseeing the nation's drug policies, according to sources familiar with the chief's plans. Kerlikowske, who has led the department for more than 8 years, has told the department's top commanders he expects to leave to take a top federal position, said the sources, who spoke on condition of anonymity because they aren't officially authorized to disclose the information. Sources say Kerlikowske is expected to be named head of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, a cabinet-level position otherwise known as the Drug Czar. The office, established in 1988, directs drug control policy in the U.S. It's subject to Senate confirmation. Kerlikowske had also expressed an interest in the top job at the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration, but apparently had not been tapped for that post, one source said. Kerlikowske won credit for stabilizing the police department after the stormy departure of Norm Stamper as chief in the wake of the 1999 World Trade Organization riots in Seattle, as well as the department's initial failure to unearth a detective's alleged theft of money at a crime scene. A genial Kerlikowske reached out to citizens. In addition, crime rates dipped during his time as chief, reaching historic lows in recent years. Kerlikowske lists one of his accomplishments as the development of less-than-lethal force options for officers, equipping dozens of officers with tasers. He also oversaw the installation of cameras in the department's patrol cars. He has been an advocate of gun control and fought to pass the assault weapons ban and has championed closing the background check loophole at gun shows. Kerlikowske's possible role in shaping drug policy for the Obama administration was applauded Tuesday by local medical marijuana advocates. In 2003, Kerlikowske opposed a city ballot measure, approved by voters, to make marijuana possession the lowest law enforcement priority, saying it would create confusion. But in doing so, he noted that arresting people for possessing marijuana for personal use was already not a priority. Joanna McKee, co-founder and director of Green Cross Patient Co-op, a medical marijuana patient advocacy group, said, quote, "Oh, God bless us. What a blessing. The karma gods are smiling on the whole country, man." End quote. McKee said Kerlikowske knows the difference between cracking down on the illegal abuse of drugs and allowing the responsible use of marijuana. Douglas Hyatt, a Seattle attorney and advocate for medical marijuana patients, said his first preference would be for a physician to oversee national drug policy, but Kerlikowske would be a vast improvement over past drug czars who have used the office to carry out so-called war on drugs, Hyatt said. Kerlikowske is a very reasonable guy, according to Hyatt, who would likely bring more liberal policies to the job. Report on testimony for Washington's Senate Bill 5615, the marijuana decriminalization bill. One of our stashers, Adam, went with his girlfriend to the hearings for Washington Senate Bill 5615, and he did a fine job of transcribing some of the highlights of the hearing, which is available online through a link that I've got up on the post at stash.normal.org. But here are some of the funniest parts. First of all, in the hearing, an opponent of the bill, who happens to be named Senator Roach, asks this question of the chair about grams and ounces.
Senator Roach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many other states have already enacted something like this? And the number of grams here, is that about an ounce and a half or something? What is that? When grams equates to ounces, what is that?
28 mm-hmm. grams to the ounce, as I recall from my old days, where we thought about ounces.
Well, it's 454
like
in a pound.
That? Can you give us some specifics?
Later in the hearing, former Representative Toby Nixon speaks in support of the bill and gets some of these pretty typical questions in these hearings from the opponent up on the committee. Of course, anytime we start talking about decriminalizing marijuana, the next question has to be, well, what? You want to legalize heroin?
I urge you to support Senate Bill 5615.
Thank you, Senator Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So using that line of thought, what other drugs would you make legal?
That's a good discussion. I think that today we're talking about marijuana specifically, and I think that it's well documented that marijuana is less addictive than alcohol, tobacco, or caffeine. And as a matter of fact, the most dangerous thing about marijuana is the possibility of getting arrested for its possession.
Kudos to the former representative for not falling for that little line of drug war idiocy. The other line that these representatives who oppose decriminalization almost always come up with is that we won't be able to catch people who are DUIs for smoking cannabis, and suddenly there'll be a whole lot of them.
From previous hearings, we do know that it's very difficult for someone who is a law enforcement officer to identify if a person has been using marijuana as the reason for having the erratic driving, where it's actually easier to tell if someone has been drinking alcohol. Do you think erratic driving on the freeway because of marijuana is something that is good?
Senator Roach, anyone who is driving erratically on the freeway can already be pulled over and cited for any number of offenses, regardless if they're using marijuana or alcohol or prescription sleep aids or any other sort of drug. This idea that suddenly there'll be a rash of marijuana DUIs just begs the question, how are there not marijuana DUIs already, and how are you dealing with them now? And of course, no hearing on decriminalization would be complete without the dreaded specter of the gateway theory.
Do you think that marijuana is a precursor to other drug use?
I think that there's no connection been shown. There's no biochemical reaction that takes place that makes one more predisposed. What does make people more predisposed to becoming involved in other drugs is the fact that marijuana is only available from the criminal element, and because they have to be in contact with people in the criminal element to get it, that it makes it possible for them to be introduced to other substances.
So you see nothing wrong with the use of marijuana then?
I don't think that it's been shown to be the devil weed that many people say that it is.
And finally, the chair of the committee, who's been funny throughout the entire hearing, or at least funny in the context of a political hearing, ends with a joke that kind of sums it all up.
And before we leave that, I would like to answer Senator Roach's question about whether it's a gateway drug. My own experience shows that it is. I used to grow my own dope, and now I brew my own beer.
That is
just kidding.
Thanks to Adam for transcribing those particular time codes for me so I could find them from the Washington State video feed, which is available online at stash.normal.org, as well as the rest of Adam's notes from the hearing on HB 5615 in Washington State. Idaho judge rules against Haley's twice-passed medical marijuana initiative. From the Idaho Mountain Express. Haley residents will not be able to use marijuana for medical purposes, despite the fact that voters twice passed initiatives in support of its legal use. Whether they will be allowed to grow it for industrial uses or get less heat from Haley police for smoking it is yet to be seen. 5th District Judge Robert Elgee ruled on Monday that a provision in the Medical Marijuana Act passed by Haley voters last summer represents an attempt to preempt state law and is therefore illegal. The provision allowed possession of up to 35 grams of marijuana for use by seriously ill people with a doctor's consent. Haley City Attorney Ned Williamson, who is defending the three marijuana laws passed by Haley voters, argued for the legislative authority of the ordinances, which include policies for instructing police on how to deprioritize marijuana offenses. He said, quote, "These policy issues should remain. The voters have spoken of their desires, and these policies are written to uphold those desires," end quote. The ordinance allowing for the growing of industrial hemp may have the best hope of surviving the lawsuit. Industrial hemp is low in mind-altering chemicals, but has many commercial uses, providing durable fibers for use in clothing manufacture. Quote, "We would not at all be offended if the Industrial Hemp Act be allowed to stay on the books," end quote, said attorney Keith Rourke, representing the mayor, councilman, and police chief in their attempt to quash the pro-marijuana initiatives. I didn't have much hope for the medical initiative, but these statements on the lowest law enforcement priority and the industrial hemp are better than I could have hoped for. Testimony to Congress. Kellogg's product poisoned three-year-old. Washington, D.C. Three-year-old Jacob Hurley nodded eagerly when he heard the name of his favorite food, Austin Toasted Crackers with Peanut Butter. His enthusiasm unaffected even after an 11-day bout with salmonella. Jacob's father, Terrence Hurley, was one of three family members testifying to Congress about the effects of an ongoing outbreak of salmonella food poisoning that has sickened 600 people, may have killed eight, and caused one of the biggest food recalls in U.S. history. Oregon Republican Representative Greg Walden asked, quote, "Can you imagine the effect on a parent if you knew you'd been poisoning your three-year-old child?" end quote, he said at the hearing of the House of Representatives Oversight Subcommittee. Who makes those Austin peanut butter crackers? Oh, right. The company that fires people for smoking that unhealthy weed. I remember now.
Georgia. Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. Time for another dose of our cannabis science, and the story that is sweeping the news wires this week has to do with a study that has been published showing some sort of increased risk of testicular cancer for young males who engage in heavy marijuana smoking. And of course, the first man I want to talk to about something like this would be Dr. Mitch Earlywine. So, Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I'll bet your phone's been ringing off the hook on this one.
It's been quite the news generator, shall we say.
Well, let's get down to the findings of the study. You know, they say that they found for this particular type of testicular cancer, there was a higher reporting of marijuana use among those people diagnosed. Let's explain, you know, how serious this study is and what risks our listeners really need to worry about.
I feel like the researchers behind this study did a great job of, you know, adding caveats and cautions, and then once the media got a hold of it, all that stuff went out the window. Mm. Nobody needs to quit adult use of marijuana for fear of testicular cancer. So this is not something that everybody should kick in their whole testicular anxiety about. I know this is a topic that gets a lot of guys a little squeamish, but testicular cancer is really quite rare, and the chances of dying of it are extremely rare. It's a very treatable cancer, not something to freak yourself out over, even if it is on one of your most sensitive parts. The bottom line on this was just that more folks who had testicular cancer mentioned that they used marijuana than this control group who hadn't had testicular cancer. There are a few things about these data that make me think we shouldn't overinterpret it, but there's enough here, a big enough sample, to make me think I would love to see something like this replicated to really try to answer a question about this. One of my biggest concerns is just a report bias among cancer patients versus non-cancer patients. If you're going in and filling out a survey or completing an interview after you've been diagnosed with cancer, you tend to be pretty candid about every single thing you've ever done in hopes of finding out just what it is you need to knock off in order to make sure you don't get some kind of recurrence of cancer. In contrast, if you're being interviewed about just general health and things like that and you don't have a cancer diagnosis, it's distinctly possible you might be a little less likely to fess up to regular cannabis use under those circumstances. So I want to keep in mind that maybe some of this is just a bit of a self-report bias.
Okay.
Nevertheless, there is a difference here, and it does seem to link to one particular type of testicular cancer, and so we're just going to need to, you know, take a close look at these kind of data. I think that the biggest, you know, risk factors for this are like being born without your testicles descended. There's some data on, you know, extremely low birth weight and things like that. Then most of the hallmark risk factors for testicular cancer are things that happen really early in life. This isn't something that just quitting using cannabis is something we need to recommend right now.
Yeah. You know, I think you hit it right at the beginning when you started to mention how the scientists had put reasonable caveats in this release. As to the tentative nature of the report, the sample size, the possibility of self-report bias, and so on. But then, as Paul Armentano often notices, once these things hit the wire services, it's usually the most salacious details that get amplified in these reports. And I think there's no better example than comparing the ABC News report in America that says, oh, there's a 70% increased in chance of testicular cancer versus something from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which was much more clear about how rare testicular cancer is in the first place. Do you see that when you're reviewing the media's reviews of these scientific reports?
It's an unfortunate thing, but one I see quite a bit is, you know, as Bruce Merkin has said before, if it bleeds, it leads. Anything that's going to make us completely frightened seems to be the thing that ends up in the headlines. Just as a point of contrast, one of the studies I found on testicular cancer has to do with men who are really tall, so guys who are like over 6'10". And actually being over 6'10" may be a bigger risk for testicular cancer than using cannabis. So, you know, you don't certainly see us throwing people in jail for that or putting out big public service announcements or changing public policy as a result. And as you've pointed out on the blog time and again, there are a number of things that have been linked to all kinds of cancer, some that are markedly more common than testicular cancer, and we don't attempt to legislate them. As some of my friends point out, eating cheesecake is not necessarily the most conducive thing to risk for cardiac problems, and nevertheless, anybody can buy a cheesecake at any time and any day,
Yeah, exactly. This idea that we'd want to arrest and lock people up because there might be an increased risk, we don't. And for me too, it's this idea of the perspective on these stories. It seems like the American media, the perspective is always going to be one that's alarmist. I made a point in one of my posts of saying that the idea that you have this increased risk of testicular cancer is kind of like saying, you've doubled your chances of winning the lottery by buying two lottery tickets.
It's very much the case. So if you went from a 1 in 300 chance to a 1 in 150 chance, again, it's still not a very big chance at all. If folks are concerned about this, what are some of the bigger predictors? And you can always talk to your regular physician about this, but generally any kind of lumps or thickness in the scrotum are things that are worth investigating. And, your general practitioner can usually do that. If you do have a cyst, basically these cysts that people get in the scrotum sometimes, they often will just put it up on a flashlight, basically. They shine a light through it and see if it's completely translucent. Odds are high there's really nothing there and nothing to worry about. But by all means, no matter how frightening it is, go ahead and get it checked out. Don't just assume everything's fine because you might be just that, 1 in 300 person. And this is a really supremely operable, curable kind of form of cancer, and so by all means, earlier the better on this kind of work.
And generally speaking, isn't this the kind of cancer that presents itself most often within the young years of a man's life, 15 to like something like 35?
In fact, that 18 to 35 group is one that seems to hit the most. Not that older folks don't get it, but odds are high because of its having these risk factors really early in life. That seems to be when it sort of plays out.
Yeah, and guys, it's not like there's any sort of stigma to this involved. We look at the cases like Lance Armstrong, famous cyclist who's living just a fine life, survivor of testicular cancer. It's easily beaten, easily treated, but you got to get yourself checked if you think there's something wrong. But don't get yourself all alarmed about these headlines you see, I guess would be some of the things we'd want to point out.
Absolutely. I think that's a great message.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes on all the reports that are coming out about marijuana and its uses. And want to remind folks, too, that just because we're advocates for the end of adult marijuana prohibition does not mean that we say that marijuana is harmless. We welcome these scientific studies. And if there are legitimate harms to be known about marijuana, we want people to know that. We want people to be informed with the facts and not the propaganda. I hope we can agree to that.
Absolutely, and I feel like a replication of this study would be most welcome, whether the results are null, meaning there is no effect, or if there is another sign of effect. Yeah, absolutely, we need to discover this.
All right, thanks for joining us again, Dr. Lewin, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. We have a treat for you stashers with the Toker Tune from Marijuana Music Awards this Reggae Wednesday. We're playing the fantastic and famous Collie Buds with his hit song, Come Around. Born in New Orleans, raised on the Isle of Bermuda, Collie Buds is hard to identify geographically. His music, however, has one of the most firmly grounded voices you may ever encounter. Incorporating influences from hip-hop to soca, Collie's music has a rock-solid foundation in reggae, with the power to connect ghetto reality with the heights of human aspiration that is a rarity even in Jamaica. As Collie says, quote, he loves the positive vibes of reggae music, end quote. Collie has been immersed in the music culture of Bermuda since he was 6 years old. Consistent encouragement led Collie to his Bermudian studio and to being signed with a major record label, Sony Music. Collie Buds had a huge hit with today's song, Come Around, which won the 2007 Global Marijuana Music Awards Song of the Year. Collie Buds' success continues. He was recently nominated for an EME Award, the Excellence in Music and Entertainment Awards, for Top International Artist of the Year, along with Stephen Marley and Sean Paul. You can grab Collie Buds' debut album, self-titled, on sale now at most music outlets, including iTunes, Sony Music Store, Napster, and Amazon.com. For more about Collie Buds and his fantastic music, check out myspace.com/Collie Buds, that's CollieBuddz, or his website, CollieBuds.com. Also, check out our blog at stash.normal.org or the MarijuanaMusicAwards.com to enter and vote in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. Here's the hit song, Come Around, by Collie Buds.
Oh, that's a sweet, sweet sentence, you know. Yeah, I. Na-na-na-na-na. So what? Yo. Finally the herbs come around. Me I grade with me I look for me get it by the pound, yeah. Sweet sense I come around. Me I take a little jar and pass it around. So finally the herbs come around. The I grade with man I look for me stock it by the pound, yeah. When Babylon I come around, ask them where them I go search for. Ever since the herbs slow down, police and road boy them in a showdown. Them I search round the compound. You'd know a man on a weed clown. Find a little piece of land and I flat me home ground. So tell the youth don't have it set feel. Too much crack and cocaine I make the world I feel ill, you know. Enough ganja, enough spliff a bill. Only thing where you make man feel chill, when me say finally the herbs come around. The high grade when me a look for me get it by the pound, yeah. When Calibud come around, a pure ganja man tune just a lick from the sound, yeah. Finally the herbs come around. The high grade when man a look for me stock it by the pound, yeah. When Babylon a come around, ask them where them a go search for. There's nothing like this sweet, sweet sensei. The first time me take a job was in elementary. Reach high school, get the herb it plenty. Like scare them dope, this watch I wanna lanky, yeah. Me stash box never empty. The $50 bag we call that top century. Me stop me own herb documentary. Burn me man I call that film for 20, yeah. When me say finally the herbs come around. The high grade when me a look for me get it by the pound, yeah. Sweet sense I come around. Me a take a little jar and pass it around. So finally the herbs come around. The high grade when man a look
look for me stock it by the pound, yeah. When Babylon a come around, ask them where them a go search for. Wanna advertise when them a go legalize. The farmer man a beg a legal fly. When them a go realize government them a terrorize. Cooperation them a capitalize. While the farmer man a beg a legal fly. Hey, yo, finally the herbs come around. The high grade when me a look for me get it by the pound, yeah. When Calibut come around, a pure ganja man tune, just a lick from the sound, yeah. Finally the herbs come around, the high grade we man a look for, me stock it by the pound, yeah. When Babylon a come around, ask them where them a go search for.
Percent of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORMA. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORMAL, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Today we got the news that Seattle Police Chief Gil Kerlikowski most likely has accepted a job as the new drug czar. To join us here with a discussion on that is the former police chief before Gil Kerlikowski, Norm Stamper, who joins us by telephone. And Norm, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Now, for people outside of the Pacific Northwest area, they might not know a lot about Chief Kerlikowski. Can you give us some background on the chief, how he came into the job, and how his tenure has been so far?
I'd be happy to do that. Gil was a police chief in a Florida city, then became a police chief in Buffalo, New York. Went to work when he left that position with the COPS office, that's Community Oriented Policing Services, out of Washington, D.C. Spent a couple years there before he was named as my successor in 2000 as police chief in Seattle.
I see. So now the rumor here, what we're reading from the Seattle PI here, is that he'll take over the drug czar's job. And I don't expect you to be able to read the man's mind, but does his past or does his tenure as Seattle's police chief give us any clues as to how he might treat drug policy?
Well, I think it does. You can't be a police chief in a major city with drug issues before you all the time without establishing a track record. I will start by saying that I think Kerlikowski will be better than John Walters.
Yeah.
I know. That's not saying much. I think what we see in Gil's background is that he opposed Initiative I-75, which was the voter-initiated act that would require police officers in the city of Seattle to put marijuana enforcement at the bottom of their priority list. Once it was passed, however, in 2003, I think it's safe to say that he has been faithful to the letter and the spirit of the law. Marijuana arrests have plummeted in Seattle. Not that they were all that high to begin with. Simple adult possession cases usually were afforded a very low priority anyway. But he did oppose it originally. He does tend to favor treatment I wish you could say that he favors treatment over enforcement, but I can't. I don't really know, if he had $1 left in his treasury, whether that dollar would go to busting people in possession of marijuana, for example, or providing treatment to those who are addicted to hard drugs. I couldn't say. I do believe that he will be more open to conversation about drug policy reform than was Walters. Once again, that's not saying an awful lot, and so I'm going to reserve judgment, hoping that if he is in fact officially named and confirmed by the Senate, that he will in short order begin a conversation nationally and indeed internationally about what harms this drug war has caused this country.
Mm. You mentioned his background with the I-75 initiative, where he opposed it, but then once it was passed, he was able to follow the law without much complaint. Is there any record on his treatment of the medical marijuana issue there in the state of Washington?
If he has said anything, I haven't heard it. I think he has been, he's not made any public statements that I'm aware of. I don't know what his private views are on that. One can hope that given the will of the voters, as was the case in I-75 for the city, that the medical marijuana reality in the state of Washington and those other dozen states in the country will be honored, that he will in fact do what he did with I-75.
We can hope so. Yeah. The report here in the PI mentions also, and you had mentioned his work with the community-oriented policing system, service?
Yes, uh-huh.
I always mess up those acronyms.
Well, in this case, the program back in Washington was the Community-Oriented Policing Services operation. You take off all the capital letters and you get right down to the heart of it, which is community policing and this idea that the police serve the community and not the other way around. So when it comes to drug policy, I think our community has been well ahead of politicians on this issue. And with I-75, with medical marijuana, with 75% of the people saying that marijuana possession ought not to be a crime, I would hope that as drugs are, Gil Kerlikowske would take that into account as well.
Mm. The PI story here mentions how Kerlikowske has developed a relationship in Washington, D.C. when he was working there under the Clinton years, and that he's worked with Attorney General Eric Holder. So I guess one thing I'm wondering, and I don't know if you would know this necessarily, but what challenges do you think he faces as somebody working in a bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., compared to trying to run a major metro police department like Seattle?
Well, that's a really good question. There is mention in at least one of the articles here, pardon me, Russ, one of the articles here locally that he had coveted the DEA position.
Mm, administrator.
Which is clearly an enforcement position. That kind of concerns me. I would have hoped that he'd have his eye on the drug czar's position, which would then allow him to take a broader look to examine the medical and other issues associated with the drug issue. But there is a huge difference between running a local law enforcement agency, which has responsibilities across the board: prevention, detection, apprehension, burglaries, rapes, robberies, car prowls, gang activity, carjackings, on and on and on, domestic violence. These are issues that occupy the attention of the top cop, if you will, in any city, not to mention office politics and budgets and developing, a relationship with your own rank and file. Those are all real important issues to a local cop. When you move into the drug czar's position, on the other hand, what you're looking at, I believe, is as a bully pulpit as much as anything else. Mm-hmm. So in the case of Walters, for example, if you think marijuana is the devil's weed and you're going to do everything you can to eradicate it, you're going to use that pulpit to that end. On the other hand, if you believe that it's time for an honest conversation about drug issues, and particularly, I think, these days relating to marijuana, you'd have somebody in that office who would use it to encourage research and analysis and a more thoughtful consideration of national policy.
Mm, yeah, that's
I do believe that any boss, or any person, I guess, in that position reports to a boss. In this case, the drug czar's position is now, and since late 80s, has been a cabinet position, which means, in effect, that his boss would be the president, possibly. I don't know if they have a relationship with the attorney general. But I think what President Obama has to say about marijuana, in every aspect of the marijuana issue, from education and prevention programs in early schooling to civil liberties and a recognition that adults ought to have the right to inject or ingest or inhale any substance they'd like into their own bodies, and particularly with marijuana, given the fact that it is demonstrably less harmful than all the other drugs, including alcohol and tobacco, that the president would be telling his drug czar, let's carve out a much more sensible and sane policy with respect to marijuana. That was a long answer. I apologize.
that's okay. It was a well-spoken one.
Well, I tend to get wrapped up in this issue. It defies belief that we still have the intensity and the scope of opposition to sensible drug policy reform. And I think for the first time what's happening is we're starting to see a national dialogue that I hope will get turned into something more substantive.
I think so, too. Now, looking back to our neck of the woods here in the Pacific Northwest, do you have any word on who might be replacing Chief Karlikowski? And if so, how do they stand on Seattle's local initiative and Washington's medical marijuana?
Well, there's been no statement from the mayor other than we're treating all of this as rumor at this stage, and we don't have anything further to say. So let's assume that the rumor is true and that Karlikowski is nominated and confirmed. I think it's the track record in this city has been an interim chief who might come either from within the ranks or outside the ranks, and then a national search. And I can't imagine that they would deviate from that process. So we're many, many months away from learning who the candidates are and who the finalists might be.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and keep everyone up in Washington State informed. And we'll be looking forward to the confirmation of Karlikowski as the drug czar when and if it happens. Norm Stamper is a former police chief of Seattle before Chief Karlikowski and a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Check them out at leap.cc. Norm, thanks so much for helping us out today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with some reminders from our Normal Daily Audio Stash Activist Agenda, available online at stash.normal.org/activist-agenda. Now, coming up on Friday, there is going to be a hearing on Montana's House Bill 475. Also in Vermont, a lobby day for the decriminalization bill. Check out our blog for more information on where to be and when to be to support these bills. Also, for those of you who missed the documentary on Independent Lens on PBS about Tulia, Texas, you can catch a replay on that on some PBS stations this Saturday at 1 p.m. is the time, Pacific time. If you want to get your events mentioned on the Activist Agenda calendar, send an email to stash@normal.org with the subject line Agenda Request. You can put your events for your nonprofit organization or anything that might be of interest to the cannabis community online for everyone else to be able to access. Thanks for downloading the podcast and helping to make The Growing Truth About Cannabis the number one podcast for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.